One of the ways we then like to describe the difference between the thinker, the doer, and the feeler, and some things that we'll look at a few times, is that if you want to liken it, we call this the unique self pyramid, is that the thinker many times is like, they can only concentrate or focus on a particular thing at one time. So that's why we kind of got them at the top of the pyramid. Their ability to concentrate and focus on very many things at a time, they just don't. They think at one or just a few things at one time. They can become very focused. So as a result, they're very, very detail-oriented type of people. Now, as a result of being very detail-oriented, they like to think things through before they act. We're talking about a person that's just primarily a thinker. Okay, you'll see the blends here in a little while. So if they've got to focus on detail, then when they do a project, what do you think is true of the project that they do? If they've taken the effort to do it, they generally have taken attention to detail. So they tend to possess their tasks. So if you come along and criticize their paper, their writing, their task, what have you just done? You've criticized them. So that's where, you know, if you have a husband that's a thinker and he's doing a project and the wife says, you know, why don't you make that a little wider? And he's a thinker, there's a reason why he made it that wide. And so then what do you think comes out of his mouth next? Well, other than, let's say, he's not in the flesh, okay. He says, why? And then you get the typical feeler answer, I feel it should be wider. You know, and they're going, no, give me some real reasons. You know, what are some really reasons why you think that particular thing should be wider, okay? So these people have real excessive mental energy. They need to focus. Their mind thinks, continually thinks, and analyzes all the time. There's a friend of ours who's a real high thinker, and another friend of ours is a real high doer. And sometimes when doers understand how other people are, then they just irritate people to no end. See, thinkers don't like you messing with their stuff, and you know. So I came home to Bill and Verlaine's last night, and my stuff was strewn all over the room. Verlaine didn't have anything to do with it. Bill didn't have anything to do with it, did he? But I have an associate who knows that thinkers don't like to mess with their stuff. So I've got everything back in my suitcase. This is my associate, Michael. And so I got everything back in my suitcase, and the only thing I couldn't find were my underwear. So I was thinking, I'm going to go the rest of the week, and Verlaine's going to pull the underwear out from someplace here in the next few days or months ahead. And I was thinking, oh man, what am I going to do? I can't find him anyplace. Well, anyway, I found him eventually under the bed, wrapped up in something. So, anyway, you can get to these people by knowing what they're like. Okay, so just kind of tag that one. And so anyway, this doer friend of ours, this came to this thinker friend. Well, this thinker friend likes to play the piano, and he says, "Well, you know, why don't you play us a piece on the piano?" "Yeah, no, I can't play very well." "Well, come on, you know, play us something." "No, I can't play very well." You know, this goes okay, and then he goes, cracks all his knuckles and gets him up, and he sits down and plays this concerto. I mean, you know, we're talking. Like the record's playing over here, that's what it sounds like. Concerto. And you're sitting there going, yeah, I can't play anything. Well, you know, to him, he probably missed a note there someplace, I don't know. You know, you couldn't tell it, but he knows where it's at. So it's no good. So this doer comes over and he says, you know, he had one of these electric pianos that he bought, real expensive electric pianos. And he said, you know, I was always wondering, what do you call the spaces in between the keys? I don't know. I've never thought about that before. And he says, now, and two, it seems like this one over here is a little bit wider than this one here. What do you think? And this guy, now he's getting, you can see his nervousness is increasing by the moment. You know, he doesn't know what they're called, number one. Number two, he doesn't know if they're up to factory specs. So he's digging out the factory specs and see what are the key spacings. Next thing you know, he's on the 800 number. Okay, now what are the exact spaces between the keys supposed to be? Well, I noticed this one over here is, you know, 1/1000th of a difference, and he's got his cap, what do you call those, calipers out there measuring, or what do you call them? Yeah, calibrators or something. He's out there measuring the exact thing. Well, this doer's just over here having a ball, just watching this guy go nuts over all this stuff, you know. Anyway, that's another way you can use this material that I don't recommend it, but then the doer, you've got to put the doer in the middle here, and what their emphasis generally is on the grand achievement. Now, one of the reasons that we put them in the middle is because they have a tendency to be able to see and analyze the small things, but also see a lot of other things. But they seem to have a good blend of both. So a lot of times when a person's a high doer, they can walk into a situation and they can assess it fairly quickly and be pretty accurate at what it is. That's why they tend to be good leaders. If they're spirit controlled, they can be real good leaders. And so they tend to get their identity then, who they are, their sense of worth, their sense of significance, by accomplishing a task through a person. These kinds of people like to know when they say something to you, if you do what they tell you, then you've just communicated to them that you respect them and you love them. See, they want to be in control, right? They want to impact their environment some way, shape, or form. And I was at a banquet one time I won't say where it's at because everybody will know what I'm talking about. And I was at this banquet one time, and this gal walks down in who had nothing to do, had no responsibilities with the banquet whatsoever, but she was a doer. And I watched her. Quit laughing, Dick. I watched her, and the next thing you know, she was over at the table moving the salt shakers and pepper shakers over 1 inch. See, she just couldn't stand being there and not impacting your environment. And I just thought in my mind as I watched her do this, she's thinking to herself, this banquet would have been a total wash if those salt shakers hadn't been moved that 1 inch over. This thing would have been totally terrible. See? And so they have to come in. They want to impact their environment to feel significant, to feel important, to feel of value. They want to impact it in some way, shape, or form. And so if you understand that about the doer, it doesn't really bother you when they do stuff like that. They're not correcting it. Because if the thinker put those salt shakers on there, you know, they were 12 inches out and 5 inches over from the corner. And each one was that way. So moving him over an inch would put that out of sync, you know, which would, you know, well, whenever. And if you're a thinker and you realize that this person had that need, you just look at it and say, okay. So they have a good sense of how others can be used as a tool to accomplish the task. They have a really good way of assessing people's strengths and weaknesses and see where they fit in to accomplish and delegate them certain tasks. Now the negative tendency though is once they're used as tools, they can be discarded. You know, move on to something else if they're not careful with that. So, and then finally the feeler. And the feeler sees so many options and so many things here, and they're so full just all these thoughts and things that they tend to miss details totally. Okay? So these ones are kind of like the person standing in the hog yard up to their knees in manure looking at the sky and say, man, isn't this great? You know, they don't necessarily always see what they're involved in. They're too busy looking at all these other things out there. And so their identity is based on their relationships. How well are the relationships going? Do people like me? Do they not like me? What do you think they're thinking about me? I wonder what they thought when I said this. Did I say this right? I wonder if they're mad at me. They didn't talk to me the other day. You think they're mad at me? You know, they're always analyzing relationships because they want to know. So when you talk to somebody, if a feeler comes in for counseling because their relationships aren't going down, what does that say about their self-image? It's probably in the dumps at that point. Okay? They desire popularity. Now, not everybody, a thinker doesn't necessarily want, you know, just give them an award once a year and they're okay. You know, that's all the attention they really want. In fact, being up in front is not their idea of fun. They don't like to be up in front of anything. But a feeler likes to be the center of attention. They like, and it's really fun when you get in a group and you got two or three feelers there. They're always competing for who's the center of attention. And it's just fun to watch them do that. And by the way, there's no time for thinkers and some other people to even say anything because they're too busy trying to outdo each other. And it's really fun, kind of fun to watch. They say often subjective, and subjective just means they view life in view of their emotions. And so it's kind of like a dog who watches its tail to see if it's happy or not. You know, so it gets up in the morning and looks back there to see if the tail's wagging. Yep, I guess I'm happy because the tail's wagging. Now they look at their emotions to determine whether they're happy or sad or what's going on. Okay. And of course, the animal that demonstrates that, I kind of left that off, is the lab, but I had to put that on because I have a lab, so I like to use that. That's another thing. Then the other thing about the thinker, feeler, doer has to do with energy levels. If you're just a feeler at 8 a.m., they're slow starters. They need a jump start in the morning. And then they just kind of keep building steam, building steam, building steam, and they're going strong at night. Okay? These feelers tend to get their, they tend to feed off people, energy-wise. So here's what I mean. If my wife, who's a feeler, if she's tired and it's like 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock at night and somebody drops by, she just starts to blossom. And all of a sudden they're just going back and forth. I hand out the magazines and go to bed. You know, she starts to blossom. It doesn't make any difference for me. I just go downhill. Because I tend to be a thinker. And see, I'm a unique blend. Thank you, Bill. I'm a unique blend of a thinker-feeler, so I'm kind of somewhere in the middle there. And see, when Mike first met me, he thought I was a doer, but then he saw that I had coffee in my hand most of the time. Then he realized that it was just caffeine. So thinkers start pretty high, and then after 8, you don't have a serious conversation. So we got 15 more minutes here. Of course, let's see. No, that's Central Time. Yeah, I've still got another hour. Okay, so you go downhill fast. Now, if your thinker's married to a feeler, when do you think the best time of day is for them to communicate? They have to do nooners. You know, that's the very best time for them. Yeah, let's do lunch. And that's where they can finally, because otherwise the thinker's too tired and the feeler's going strong. Okay? Now, doers, they kind of start high and they just go straight across. They have, I like to say, they have two speeds, go and sleep. So if they're going and they come home for lunch or something like that, my father-in-law was a doer. And so he was a farmer, a rancher. So he'd get out and he'd work and he'd come home for lunch. He'd eat his lunch, sit in his easy chair, and then what the next thing you know, the false teeth would be in his lap, you know. And then you wake him up and he goes out and works hard and comes home for supper, sits down, and false teeth is in his lap again. You know, he goes to sleep, you know, continually. Whenever he ceases his motion, he gets bored and goes to sleep. So he just kind of go, stop, type of thing. And doers tend to do, they're all or nothing people. My brother-in-law is also a doer. My father-in-law, who's now passed away, he was a doer. And so I used to go out to feed cattle with him in Kansas. It's on a ranch. And so it was really interesting. On the Ford pickups, in the wintertime, there are these heaters on them, you know, that just like anything else. And heaters have more than two speeds. You know, it's not on and off. Most heaters have like two or three, depending on the luxury models of it, you know, like high, medium, high, low, and off, right? So we're driving down. It was the most comical thing for me to watch, you know. we're getting out there, the pickup's new, it's just started, and so my father-in-law pumps the thing on high. Just reaches over, kind of slaps it up, you know, and that switch goes up on high. And so we're going down the road, and of course it gets to be about 90 degrees in the cab. Then my brother-in-law reaches over and goes, wham, like this, all the way down to off. So it goes off, and it's okay for about 5 minutes. But then, you know, it's below zero outside, so now all of a sudden it's getting pretty cold in there, so my father-in-law reaches over and goes, pop, like that, all the way up to high. So we get high, and it feels pretty good for about 5 minutes, and now it's running about 90 degrees. So then my brother-in-law, and this thing goes on all day long, you know. And you want to reach over there, but you're going to get slapped, you know, if you do that, because they're just going, pff, 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 pff. So anyway, they were both doers. So they don't know what the in-between is, so they have problems with that. So then you can tell that if you're a combination, and this is how you tell, you take your two highest scores. So if you have like a 12 thinker, for instance, and an 8 feeler, you'd be a thinker-feeler if your doer was down to about zero or so. So you'd be classified a thinker-feeler. So you'd be some kind of combination of these. So it's not a direct type of a thing. Which brings us to the next point. How many of you, are you all finished with the questions? And if you are, I want to kind of hear right now, what do you feel that, what are you? How many primary thinkers do we have in here? That your highest score is thinker. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, okay, 7. Now what about primary doers? It would be very uncommon for someone to have that in this conference because they don't come to conferences. They're too busy doing things. Okay, do we have one? Bill? Bill? But you're doer thinker? Yeah, what's your secondary thinker? That didn't surprise me. Okay, doer thinker. Okay, and how many of you are primary feelers? Primary feelers. One? Okay, and what I'm talking about, what I'm talking about is the first three. A, B, and C. A, B, and C is all. Just the top one. Excuse me. Okay? Any feelers? Good, I can pick on. Oh, one. I'm still picking on. Okay, how many thinker-feelers combinations? That's be the highest two. How about feeler-thinkers? Are you feeler-thinker? What are your two top two? Rob?
What else are they both?
Are they equal?
Yeah.
Okay. What are they? Feeler thinker? Or feeler thinker doer?
It was feeler
thinker doer. All high. The same, pretty much?
No. Feeler was off the scale, and thinker doer was close too.
Okay. So you're feeler. Okay. Okay, any other combination? Do we have any feeler doers here? Now wait, since we don't have primary, we only have one primary feeler. How about doer feelers? No. How about thinker? No. I guess we got everybody covered. Is there somebody I hadn't? What are you? Thinker doer. Okay. Are you a thinker doer?
I think I am.
I think I am. What's the score? Boxia too, so that means you're more of a feeler. But, yeah. But what that also means is, since they're pretty much in a narrow band through there, you could just be pretty much, you could be what we call multifaceted. Multifaceted, which means you're basically, you can function out of any one of them, depending on the circumstance. Okay? Anyone else want to share theirs? Tim, what are you? Thinker doer. Okay, just like that. Are yours like that too? Oh. Oh, okay. Okay, that's the last question I'm going to ask you. Okay. Now, in your material, We're not done yet. Because in your material then, you've asked, a lot of people at this point like to ask the question, well, now when, you know, I'd really like to know the characteristics of my uniqueness. Now, here's a little known fact that people miss when they take a test or take an instrument. By the way, this is an instrument, not a test, because tests test something, instruments measure. We're just measuring something, not testing. You can't flunk this test, okay? It's like studying for your blood test. You know, it just doesn't work. What you'll find is, like, let's take section one, part one, the very first questions you have. What was the first question? I'd rather work with things other than people, right? What if you answered yes to that? What does that tell you about yourself? I'd rather work with things other than people. I'm not trying to make this complicated, okay? And so whatever you answer through that, yes to, that's part of your uniqueness. So there you have a list of characteristics right there, right? And you have the no's too. So what I'm saying is, how you answered yes and no is already a list of your uniqueness right there in front of you. So you've already got the list divided into thinker, doer, feeler, because you'll notice that it, part one, section one, part one is thinker, section one, part two is doer, section one, part three is feeler. So you've got a whole list of characteristics of those persons, if they were just that. Now, what does it mean when the scores are? These are some of the questions that we have. What does it mean when the scores are? Let me find that overhead. And we're not going to look at this exactly right now, but what does it mean when the scores are very, very high? And there tends to be, when you see scores that are in the 14 to 16 range up here, that has to do with compulsivity, compulsive behaviors, okay? So is anybody kind of rank up in that area besides Todd? Are you compulsive? Huh? Yeah. What are you? Thinker. What's a thinker? Is it like 14 or 16? 14? Okay. Okay. That's pretty high. See? Now let's do Todd. Okay. So it tends to be as like a lot of these people, especially with high thinkers or even high feelers, they can have a tendency to begin to obsess. It's a compulsive thing. They begin to obsess on their particular element. Like a thinker, what do they obsess on? What they're thinking about. And it's interesting about a thinker is what they think about determines their mood. So the scripture, set your mind on things above, is of special importance for thinkers, especially obsessive thinkers. So they tend to be very thinking oriented. Now we're going to be looking at those characteristics. And sometimes, but not always, see, we don't really go look at the scores, but as you'll notice, on yours it's a little bit different, right? The 50% isn't quite as wide, correct? That's a correction we made. So this overhead is an old overhead. But all that is, the percentages say, is that 50% of those characteristics belong to you if you fall. Isn't it plus 4 and minus 4? Is that right? That says that 50%. So you know, we're not saying, if you come out of minus 2, that's not, you're still within the 50% range. See what I'm saying? So that's not a bad thing. Now when you do get down to the 0%, zero up in this, then you may have a little bit of repression in some of these areas. Okay, when you get down to the minus 14 or something like that, you know, you have a tendency towards those. And then you'll see that there are basically three ones. So when I was asking about you, I was asking you to give me your scores in a social environment. That means just on the average as I relate to people. But under stress then, it becomes the next three boxes. Now let's just take Todd. He's a thinker, he's a thinker feeler, and your doer was low, right? Like, or 0, 6. Okay, that's still pretty good there. Okay, so he's got that 6. Now, under stress, what were your scores? Okay, 10, 2, and 4. Now, what do you think that communicates? I don't know, Scott. Why don't you tell us? Okay. What that says is, see, some of these things, he was a 14, but under stress, he sees a reduction in his analytical. He's not analyzing quite so much. He's also, in the doer, tends to take action. That has gone down too. And your 12, again, is pretty well, you just move the whole chart down like this. So you just move the whole chart down like this for Todd. And what that means then is that Todd, in the midst of conflict, kind of pulls back. He's still analyzing, he's still relating to some degree, and he's still taking some action, but he's pulling back. In all three areas, he's pretty consistent in doing it. Okay? But not everybody does that. Let's say that he goes from a 14, and let's say his thinker went down to a 0, and his doer went up to 16. And his feeler went down to 0. I'm going to be doing marriage counseling pretty soon, right? Now, what would that say would happen? Well, he's not analyzing. He's attacking. He's going to fix it. He's going to go after it. And relationship, he'll come back to the relationship later. See, that's what it say. So if you look at the scores and you compare it with the first boxes, you get to an idea. You look at each one and see what begins to happen. Now, that it's not all that confusing because it has to be personal on your own level. Okay? So you see what it does. If your thinker goes down, that means you're not analyzing quite as much. If your doer goes down, it means you're pulling back a little bit. If your doer goes up, you may actually attack a little bit. And if your feeler goes down, you're becoming less relational. Sometimes their feeler goes way up. They become more relational. You know, they're trying to fix the relationship. And then finally, in the area of affection, that affection there is not like hugging and kissing and so forth and so on, even though it's included with that. They're talking about praising, acceptance and love and so forth and so on. And so then you get a lot of times, and what I tend to see is a lot of people rank fairly high in the feeling area. You know, the scores rank fairly high because they desire more praise. And we're not a generation that give each other a lot of praise, to be honest. So you see, a lot of scores happen up there. And thinkers in the area of affection, they have affection needs, but once they're met, they want you to kind of stay away. Because they feel suffocated if you come after them. Feelers tend to say it one more time, please. I love you. And when you get done, guess what they say? Say it one more time, please. I love you. Okay. You know, they want to hear it over and over again, some kind of praise, wooing and cooing and so forth and so on, if they're just a feeler. Doers like attention on demand. You know, so they're the fathers that sit there and say, come over here and give your dad a hug. You know, or come over here and sit on my lap. Do the, you know, it's attention on demand. Give me, I feel like some attention. Get over here. You know, and so they take steps to do that. Okay, see what I'm saying there? So we'll look at that a little bit more. But what I want us to do now is I want you to turn to the page where it has the thinker characteristics. Now, you're not going to be able just to read along with me because I have a little bit different notes than you do. And besides that, you don't want to read along with me because you have lists right there. Right? So you don't need to read along with me. On that, plus I have some new things. Okay? And one of the things that I've done, and it's probably kind of unfair, but I've taken those, what page are we on here? So everybody's kind of with us. Which one? B24? Okay. Okay, well you can read just as well as I do, and one of the things that I want you to do there is to, as we go through some of them, you'll be able to figure out. But what I've done is I've taken the characteristics and divided them into a number of different areas. Okay? Now, that's not been exactly done in the booklet. That's what I've done on my teaching thing, so I can, that helps me. But some of the basic characteristics then that you see then there in the book, I'm debating on which way to go with it because I don't want to lose you on this. In fact, maybe I'll just go through the ones in the book. The thinker basic characteristics, and I'm going to expand on these then, is they have a tendency to value truth and honesty and expects others to value them. Now, here's what that means. A thinker, and it's not to say that doers and feelers don't value truth. You know, that's a misunderstanding. But these people have a sense, they have an overdeveloped sense of conscience, if you will. And they value being truthful to themselves. And so a thinker recently came to me and said, "Say, by the way, you know, you said we were doing some kind of project and building materials, and we charged some materials. We'd use my charge card for it and everything else." And he says, "Well, how are we going to do it?" And I says, "We'll just take it out of the, you know, he bought this door or something." And I said, "We just take it out the door, or take it out of the door. You know, just do it. Don't mess with me on it." Well, then it come time to figure taxes, and guess what he couldn't get me on? That one charge. So finally, he spent hours and hours and hours debating what he should do because of like $60. So then he drove across town and paid me $60 cash, which he really didn't owe me, just so that he could not claim that on the IRS that he got more income than, you know what I'm saying. And so he got obsessing on that one thing. He wanted to make sure. Now, every thinker would say, "Well, he should have done that. That's what he should have done." You know, whatever. I say, okay, that's fine. But, you know, and so they're the ones that, you know, if someone drops a penny, you know, they want to track them down and give it to them. And, so they value that, but as a result then, when someone talks to them, guess what they expect them to do? Tell the truth. Now, if you tell them a lie, and they find out about it, you're in big time trouble. They do not like being lied to, period. So they value truth. So they can be suckered in pretty easy, but they'll only be suckered in once, generally speaking, by that person, and that's it, you know. And as a result, too, they have a little bit of a hard time with forgiveness. Because they can tend to, what does their analytical mind then do, go over and over again? Well, it obsesses on that particular deceit and the feelings of that I'm stupid because I got deceived in that way in the first place, and you know, so forth and so on. These people prefer order. Now, I say prefer order. That doesn't mean that they have it, but they prefer it. Okay, sometimes if you're a thinker, it doesn't make a difference, husband or wife, and little children come along, or lots of little children come along, you prefer order. You don't necessarily have it. You just prefer it. Okay. And you'll find that generally thinkers will then find it someplace. They'll find order someplace. So they'll get to their office and have it there. That never did work for me. So you have to find it something. Maybe it's just up here that you have order. Or your wallet has, you know, order, and the dollar bills come first and the $5 bills come next and the $10 bills come next. You know, that kind of stuff. There's some kind of order. You have things in order. You know, they tend to look to money for security, so they don't like it when the money is up before the end of the month. Is that how they say that? Well, that works. You know, they don't like that. Now, nobody really likes that, period. But they really don't like it. You know, they like to know that the money's there to pay the bills when the bills are due, and they like to pay the bills on time. This whole idea of, oh yeah, well, you know, it was due yesterday, but, you know, I'll get around to it today or tomorrow. They don't like that. They like it done right away. They generally have 1 to 3, now we're talking about a primary thinker, 1 to 3 close friends because they're extremely loyal. Now what's interesting is a lot of people think that they're thinkers' friends because of the ability to talk and communicate with people and so forth. So a lot of people think that they're close to them. But most thinkers, when they get to a point where they can share honestly with somebody and it's a reciprocal thing, they don't allow a lot of people to get close to them. just a few. Okay? So they're very extremely loyal. They need quiet time alone each day because people drain their energy. That's why I say when people come over late at night, I hand out the magazines and go to bed. Because they drain energy from me. And so thinkers, people drain their energy. And so they like quiet time. They like time alone. And again, this gives you some understanding again where you have young fathers and mothers with multiple little children running around the house. How much time alone do you get? Not very much time. And that can be real difficult for them. They're very analytical. They can get lost in the forest. And again, they'll see the difference between an analytical thinker, real thinker characteristics. See, sometimes feelers will think a lot too. But guess what they think about? Huh? They think about their relationships and what other people are thinking about them and feeling about them and so forth. And that's all they think about, essentially. But they're thinking a lot. But true thinkers will think about anything. You know, they'll be, you say, what are you thinking about? Oh, I was thinking about, you know, why is it that exit sign? See that exit sign over there? Why is that E not as bright as the T over there? You know, my son will be sitting there we're sitting there talking and he's watching TV and he says, Dad, do you realize that in the credits there were three Joes? Like, who cares? I mean, you know, but he'll do that kind of stuff, or he'll say, do you realize that we passed five yellow cars on the way to the store? You need to go, yeah, I really needed to know that. So I found, you know, my oldest son's a thinker doer, and he'll keep track of little things in order. I mean, in fact, we noticed this tendency when he's about 2 years old. He was on one of these Easter egg hunts at some family outing type of a thing, and so he got a bunch of candy in his Easter basket or what stuff like this. And all the little kids were, you know, had chocolate. And he was just as clean as can be because he hadn't eaten any yet. But he had all the yellow jelly beans and the red jelly beans lined up end to end across the table. And now whatever you do, don't mess with his stuff. But he's got this stuff lined across the table. And he's not eating one. You know, he's just lining them up and he calls it orderating it. When he was two, he orderated it. And I thought, which is good, you know. Why would we say organize anyway? It is orderate, you know. So, you know, they're very analytical types of people. They like multiples and things like that. Feelings of inferiority. Now that's just a common thing with a thinker. The reason they have feelings of inferiority has to do with the fact that if there's 99% right and 1% wrong, what do they focus on? 1% wrong. So they know what's wrong with them. They always focus on what's wrong with them. And because they focus on what's wrong with them, what's right with them is out here. And they can't see that. So you ask them for a list of all the negative things, they can give you a list very quickly. You ask them, tell me all the things you appreciate about yourself. And they're just clueless what you're talking about. What are you talking about? So they know all that's bad. They can become a blame taker. That's a result of that. They tend to be perfectionistic, real perfectionists. If I do everything right, then I won't get rejected. If I do everything right, then I won't get rejected. If I'm quiet, I won't get rejected. You know, those kinds of stuff. Very excessive mental energy. So a lot of times some of these people read before they go to sleep. Or they get up and read, or they, you know, do a number of different things because they want their mind's got to be working on something. What they think about determines their mood. They must have something in mind. They can be prone to anxiety attacks because, you know, if I know all that's wrong, what am I going to think about? What's going to go wrong? What's going to happen if they have an extreme fear of the unknown? So you tell them ahead of time about your plan. See, a lot of times what we do now is we put out a schedule on a conference for thinkers. We may not follow that schedule at all, but at least the thinkers know that somebody has a schedule. And as long as they know you have a schedule, they're okay. So you put that out and then it's okay. You know, you don't necessarily have to follow it, but, and we were going to take a hike up in the mountains one week, weekend, and we had this thinker with us, and he said, "How long is it going to take?" And he said, "Well, I don't know. We're just going to go for a hike." "Well, I'm not going unless I know how long it's going to take." "Well, it's going to take 45 minutes." "Okay, let's go." Well, we still didn't know how long it was going to take, but he had to at least know, have something in mind that somebody had a plan of action or something. They tend to typically be a late bloomer because they don't take a lot of risk. They have high standards, higher than God's. And some people have a hard time understanding that part. And what does it mean by higher than God's is that, well, God may forgive, but I have a hard time forgiving myself. God may forgive me, but I have a hard time forgiving myself. They keep lists. So when they make lists, even the invisible ones, they feel like they need to get it done. They really, really need to get it done. If they don't get it done, then foo-hoo-hoo. You know, so they could be up late. They got to get it done. Now, here's the difference between the three, by the way. Thinkers keep lists. Doers make lists to be more productive. And feelers lose lists. Okay, that's the difference between the three. So, you know, for feelers, you make extra sets of lists and keys and cards and all kinds of things because they don't know where that stuff is most of the time. They internalize the anger, so they don't have the luxury of daily explosions. High feelers, and Todd, you're in this area. Let me ask you a question. Let's see if this is true. How many times have you really blown up and lost it in the last 10 years? I mean, totally out of control, lost it.
Three.
Since you've been married? Is that? No. Okay, but see, three. Now, do some of you think that's surprising? For some of you doers, yeah, I mean, that'd be pretty surprising for some feelers and doers and stuff. They're going, what? I mean, I do that in a week. You know. But most of the time, thinkers don't lose control very often. These people are very tight in their control of their emotions. And they don't lose it very often. But when they do, it is Mount Vesuvius. Because they're out of control. And then guilt comes crashing in so tremendous, they feel so bad and that they lost it, that they, you know, even if they can be just a little bit of critical, then they just... You know, they internalize that anger. They like to keep it within here where it's safe and it doesn't hurt anybody except themselves. So they're ulcer getters, not ulcer givers. They tend to be ulcer getters in that sense. 60% of the people have at least half of those characteristics. It's worth noting that this category of person lends itself most readily to a methodical conversion. A lot of thinkers, they don't have this wild conversion experience when they come to know the Lord. They just kind of... It's like, oh yeah, that's right. And then next thing you know, they're walking with God. And it takes an act of God. See, they tend to get a real security out of structure. So these are the liturgical people, if you will. They like liturgy. You know, let's do it the same every time. And by the way, a lot of your Protestant churches are liturgical, aren't they? Aren't they? You know, you sing the hymns basically in the same place, or... like I was sharing today, even in the churches that are real big on praise, you know, 45-minute praise service, you know, and stuff like that, the guy will be up there and he'll be praising God, but with his hand he's going 3, 2, 1 for the choir to come in back here, you know. You know, they've got it planned out. You know, they know exactly when they're supposed to start singing back here, you know. And they've got it all planned. And so we have our own. Some of the misunderstandings then. Let's see. Before we do that, though, I'm going to go back to my other notes. And the reason is because what I did is I categorized this into emotionally then. What are thinkers like emotionally? And we've looked at some of these. You know, we said that they had feelings of inferiority. They internalized the anger. Because they internalize emotion, this would just be something else. Because they internalize their emotions, they tend to be out of touch with their emotions. So sometimes, because they... deny emotions, they're controlled by their emotions. They're not comfortable with it. And so they kind of repress them and stick them out over here. And because they deny and repress them over here, they tend to control their life. And what we'll find is most thinkers rationalize their emotion. They like to think they're rational, but they're not always rational. Because if they've got unresolved emotion over here, they'll rationalize those emotions. And so that's one of the things that they do. Okay? So that's something a little extra there. Some of the misunderstandings then is misunderstandings. They cannot separate the task from their identity. Now, here's one of the ways that expresses itself. If someone says, "What is your opinion about?" So you ask a thinker, "What do you think, or what's your opinion about this?" Now, when they give you their opinion, what are they giving you? But if they're not careful, they're giving you their identity. So what happens if you reject their opinion? You've just rejected them. So that's one of the major things with my wife and I. Well, where would you like to go eat? And you can kind of look at me and I say, I don't care. And so, yeah, you can tell me all you want, but here's what would really show me that you love me, if you did all these little things over here. And so there can be miscommunications there. Serious and quiet moods are not to be confused with disapproval. They're merely thinking. And here's an interesting thing, is biting humor is an often release of pressure. Okay? Along with the expression of genuine acceptance. So with most thinkers, if they start teasing you in some way, shape, or form, it means they like you. And it generally takes the form of biting humor. I always enjoy Mike's story of his son, his oldest son, who he was sitting on the couch with him one day, and his son's just the ultimate thinker, real quiet, inward, non-expressive. And he says, "Hey," Mike said to him, he says, "You know, I never realized how much that you really look like me." You know, this kid's like 17 years old, and without even looking at him, he says, "Well, I guess I'm going to have to start working out." Well, that's a sense of biting humor, you know, types of things. And, you know, sometimes, one of the things that I did one time with my wife, and I'm really proud of this, is my wife and I both, but we have this tendency to get up in the middle of the night to make a bathroom run at some point. And we have our bed doesn't have a foot on it, so that it's just hanging out there. So anyway, every time she gets up, she goes to the bathroom, she comes back, she feels where my feet are. And then she goes over to the left, because she sleeps on that side, and she crawls in and then she gets in bed. So I don't know what possessed me to do this, but every night, you know, she feels where your feet are all the time, and of course you're waking up, you feel this thing on your feet, and you realize what it is, you go back to sleep. So one day when she got up, I just put my feet on her side of the bed. So anyway, she came over, felt where my feet start crawled right off the edge of the bed on the floor. Oh, I loved it. I thought that was great. Anyway, you can have a weird sense of humor too, doing some of these things. Or, you don't want to hear all those stories. Anyway, under pressure then, generally under pressure, a thinker will withdraw. They'll go into their cave. You know, I don't want to relate to you. Either for protection of you, or my emotions are getting to where I might get out of control, and so I want to just withdraw. Back here for a while, just kind of leave me alone and I'll come out eventually. Okay? And generally, they marry somebody who follows them right into their cave, you know. So then somehow they got to drive them away by either getting moody or doing something. They got to say, "Shh, get out of here, you know. And they can become then critical of themselves and others then. And a lot of times when they withdraw, that's the cave experience. So get into the cave, and if they are successful in keeping their mate out, then who's in the cave? Themselves. So where does all that analytical energy go? On themselves. So they're figuring out everything that's wrong about themselves, and sometimes they get focused on others. Well, what's wrong with my mate? So they figure everything that's wrong with them. And they may even get to a point where they entertain thoughts of suicide. It's a real common thing with thinkers. Well, the world would be better if I weren't breathing somebody else's air. So, you know, maybe I should assume room temperature. And, you know, whatever. They attempt to control the environment and others, and that attempt to control is to protect themselves so that they don't get hurt, so they don't get rejected, so they don't get a number of things. become very depressed. They give in to anxiety again because they know everything that's wrong, and they replay the hurts others have caused them. In affection, they have low to moderate displays of physical affection. And you can generally say that when their physical affection needs are met, they want their spouse to back off, for most thinkers. And so this is a lesson I had to learn on my honeymoon. I'm a thinker. She's a feeler. So we get this, you know, nice king-size bed. And, you know, when we're sleeping, where do you think she has to be? She's got to be right on top, actually right next to you, snuggled, right? Well, you know, when you sleep single for 26 years, it's kind of hard to just go from not snuggled to snuggled, you know? You know, so it's just kind of difficult to do that. So anyway, I would move over, and then next day I'd wake up and I'm being pressed again. So I'd move over again, and next day, this is a king size bed, right? Next day, so then I'd get out and I go over to the other side of the bed and go to sleep in there, and next thing you know, she's pushing me off that side bed. So I mean, you might as well be sleeping in a single bed, right? You know, or a sleeping bag, you know, because, hey. And so that's one thing that I had to learn. So then finally she would go to sleep and she'd put her foot out and reach way out like this and touch me with her toe. You know? So she had to be touching me in some way, shape, or form, when she's going to sleep. When approached to be held, they may feel then suffocated. Again, when their physical needs are met. Okay? When they had their fill of love and affection, then they kind of want some space. You know, want anymore. They need a security in a situation. So they don't like to live, they don't like to go in and, like the other day, Mike and Betty were talking, and Mike was going to fly into Cairo. And, let's see, have you been to Cairo? Was that the area you were at? Or something? Well, you know what Cairo is like. So he's going to fly into Cairo, and he had like a 36 or 24 hour layover. And, she said, well, what are you going to do? And he says, well, I'm not, you know, I'm just going to, you know, his brother-in-law is Iranian or something and they know a little Arabic. And so he knows how to get around a little bit with it. He said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to find a taxi driver and introduce myself and maybe he'll take me home with him and let me stay there and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And of course, she's a thinker. She says, I'm not going with you. Don't ever ask me to travel with you. Well, you know, he'll find some place to sleep that night or just stay up all night. That's not a big deal. But, you know, a thinker needs security. They want to know where they're going to stay and how much it costs and how you're going to get there and who's going to be there to meet you and all that kind of stuff. They need someone to promote them and see their value. Because, see, they're not going to promote themselves and that kind of stuff. They need recognition of the impact that his attention on detail has on daily life. See, we need thinkers if they're very detail-oriented. Because we need people in our lives that take care of the details or businesses or whatever. We need the detail people. Otherwise, the paperwork doesn't get done. You give them some quiet time alone. You give them time to adjust before forcing them to act. Okay? Now, this is a difficult thing. What if you got a thinker child and it's time for them to go to bed and it's 5 minutes before they're supposed to, you know, generally it's a good deal to give them 5 minutes to adjust to the idea. You know, and a lot of times, you know, we'll come in there and say, hey, it's time to go to bed. And there's 5 minutes left of their TV program or 3 pages left in the book they're reading or something. And it's best to give them a warning, a time warning, okay? You know, 10 minutes and lights out, and that gives them time to finish whatever they're trying to finish. So a lot of times, you know, thinkers like Mike will come in to me sometimes and say, well, why don't you go out and take this next section and share on such and such. Well, that's 5 minutes from now. Well, I'm a thinker. So you can imagine my response is like, okay, I guess I can do that. You know, but it takes me a while to adjust to that. You know, it's a real walk of faith. Set his mind on the positive, not allow the negative to spiral. They fear antagonism, okay? In relationship with God, then, have difficulty in forgiving themselves or others. Have difficulty in letting go of a mental obsession. So one of the things is, of course, because they do keep track of right and wrong, they can have a real difficult time in just that whole forgiveness issue. And that's why forgiveness is a major issue for thinkers. And we do, by the way, out at the book table, have a book on giving and asking forgiveness, because it is that way. Difficulty in letting go of a mental obsession. See, it so filled their life, what would they do without it? And sometimes you can find when you're talking to somebody, they'll be obsessing on something. And if they were to let go of that obsession, what would they think about? So sometimes with a thinker, you have to give them a replacement obsession. You know, something else to think about. You know, set their mind on. And you just don't say, stop thinking. Because that's not going to work for them at all. To fear God, they have a fear that God will not act or make them do something that's not sensible. So these people, you know, they do really, they don't want to be out of control. And that's not their idea of fun. And so they're not high risk takers. And so with their walk with God, you know, they can translate this right on into their walk with God. You know, God say, well, get up and go tell somebody this or that. And they're just kind of going, no, I'm not going to do that. Because what if I'm wrong? See, I'd be made to look like a fool or something like that. Failure may be a 10 for him, but a 1 for God. So these people really have a fear of failure. And so that when they're listening, they're learning to hear God, they're learning to do all these things, they don't want to fail. They absolutely do not want to fail. They want to understand before believing. See, so that's their precondition. God, if you let me understand, how did the hemoglobin in the blood of Christ wash away my sins? Would you kind of tell me how those carbon and iron molecules did that? And of course, you know, God's going, what? No, God doesn't do that. You know, he's not going to give those kinds of answers. And yet a thinker seems to think that they've got to do that. They've got to have all that stuff before they're able to make those kinds of decisions. I've got to know all the facts before I can make that kind of decision. There's a verse I wanted to share in The Thinker. Here we go. In John 6:69, it says, we have believed and have come to know that you're the Holy One of God. And that verse basically demonstrates we have believed. We have believed. There's the faith. And have come to know. See, the thinker wants to come to know and then they believe. So they always tend to put knowledge before belief. Now the other thing that they do that's kind of interesting is they equate hearing God with intellectual insight. Well, how was church today? If they learn something new, then they'll say, oh, it was great. Oh, but I heard that sermon before. Then it wasn't great, right? Because I already know that intellectually. And so unless they have some great intellectual insight, it doesn't really give them a buzz, so to speak. So they like to, you know, they like to learn new things and show me new ways that things correlate and so forth and so on. Their value in the kingdom, they do the work, meaning they do the real detail-oriented work. They're loyal, good teachers, great disciplers. You know, they have a tendency to really focus on doctrine. So they have that real, that's not doctrine as doctors do, but doctrine as studying the Trinity and the end times and all that fun stuff that everybody likes to analyze and look at. And, you know, they tend to have pretty good detail or they have their scriptures in line and so forth and so on. And they can make pretty good teachers. And will not deviate from the teaching they receive, generally speaking. They're pretty true. That's part of their loyalty in that. Their vocation, you know, they just vocational-wise, they quality, detail work. They can work with others if they are competent. You know, they like to work with other people if the other people can do the job and if they're not slackers, so to speak. They're more satisfied if with this responsibility they have authority. You know, they don't like having responsibility, but they're not getting to be able to carry the job out, you know, and get people's cooperation. They want a consistent job description, not one that's always changing. You know, they want to know if they're meeting up to it. Then they want to work and then go home with minimal work infringement on their personal life. You know, they don't want to, you know, so they like to work here and then go home and not carry the work along with them and be separated from it. Okay? Now, some of the extra things that I had, one is that thinkers tend to get security in doing and thinking right. So where is their security needs at? From doing and thinking right. So that's why they're perfectionists with those high standards. So if you tell them that they have wrongdoing or wrong thinking, then that's why sometimes they don't want to think about themselves. They may have some wrong emotions, and for them, they can't even tolerate that. You know, they don't like to look at what's wrong with themselves because they're very aware of what's wrong with themselves. And so sometimes they try to avoid that. Their security is in the known, in control, in money. We looked at that. But their security can be then in their own ability to reason and to know things. Okay? A few things that I've jotted down recently then, some of the newer stuff, and then we'll share one illustration. Thinkers feel a need to share all the reasonings they've used to come to their decision. This is something, it's not there. It's not in your notes. This isn't. So they sit there and they say, okay, now. Somebody says, well, did you make a decision? Well, yes, I make a decision. I'm not going to go. Now, let me tell you why I'm not going to go. There are 7 reasons why I'm not going. And, you know, the doer's going, punt the reasons. I got my answer. I'm out of here. You know, I don't care what the 7 reasons are. Just, you know, I've got your decision. Now I'm going to go on. But then the thinker then follows them out. Well, there are 7 reasons why I'm not going to go. And they have to share. There's this compulsion. So you see, they don't like to be misunderstood. So they want to share with you why they came to that decisions. They focus on the details of life, and it makes it difficult to communicate with them without getting bogged down. So other people have frustrations trying to talk with thinkers because they get bogged down in their communication with them. You know, so they're always defining or redefining and doing this and doing that, and they're talking about all this. You know, they start at point A and end up in point Z, and then they come back to point A. Somehow they relate it back there. I don't know how they do that, but they do. And many times I like to use a map illustration for them. You start talking to a thinker and they say, well, you know, and all of a sudden you're caught in this detail, just total analytical detail that you're not interested in, you know. And you say, now, wait a minute, let's look at the big picture for a minute. Kind of like flying into Oklahoma City, you see where, you know, Norman's over here and Moore's over here, and you kind of get a big, big overview of it. Now let's talk about an overview of this. You're trying to communicate this with a thinker. Now on the first bend is that old oak tree. Remember that old oak tree? Oh yes, I remember that old oak tree. There, see that swing there, and there's that heart and says from Billy to Johnny. You know, I got my first kiss there. And, you know, the flowers. And all the next thing you know, the thinker's back into the details of things. You're trying to explain to them a big picture, and they got caught on the first bend. You know, they're on the roadmap, and they're just talking about this tree. And I mean, it's frustrating to talk about them. I mean, if you're just trying to share something, that you need to get through it because they'll analyze it to death. Okay? Let's see. Oh, thinkers need to realize there's a difference between what is and what should be. Okay? There is a difference between what is and what should be. Many thinkers get stuck on the should-be's of life. They can tend to get bitter and angry because things aren't different when it's obvious that it should be different. I mean, everybody should see that, shouldn't they? They should be different. So the challenge the thinker that they need to focus on what is, the reality, not just the what is, how the what is could become the should be. Now that makes sense, but, you know, get them to focus on what is. And if they think of the should-be's, challenge them to think about how would you make the what is the should-be? Does that make sense? Or how do you bridge the two? How would you bring that about? And at least they'll begin to channel their energy a little bit different than just the should-bes. Because what then becomes the should-bes? My wife should be this. My kid should be this. My job should be this. Instead of thinking then, if it should be that, then and this is where it is, then how are we going to bridge the gap? How are we going to make the two? Thinkers need to understand how irrational people are. Okay? That will really calm them down quite a bit. If they really understand that people are irrational, including themselves. That it cuts themselves some slack. Yes, really. Irrational. You know, people are really irrational. I mean, let's look at this last election. Was that a rational decision or no? No, not yet. No. Let's stay away from that topic. Okay. Thinkers. Okay, we already talked about can be controlled by the emotions, and thinkers will avoid this is something. They'll will avoid places and circumstances which make them uncomfortable emotionally. Thinkers will do that. Now, what do you think would be probably the most uncomfortable place for a thinker who has to be in control emotionally? Well, probably a funeral would be a pretty good start, don't you think? It's probably not their idea of a favorite place. Not that it's anybody's favorite place, to be honest. But what they don't like is they don't like places where people are out of control emotionally. Now, one time I was a hospital orderly in central Iowa, and I showed up for work. I worked a 3 to 11 shift, and I showed up at 3, and they said, well, don't check in on the floor. You're going to go up to 3 East. I said, okay. I had worked there long enough that I knew 3 East was vacant. So I didn't know exactly what's going on here. They said, we have a special patient up there for you. And so as I took the elevator, they wouldn't give me any more information then. So I was going up the elevator to 3 East. And the closer to 3 East I got, the louder the yelling became. Well, what had they done is they'd found some drunk transient who was harmful, and they had him restrained and strapped in bed. And my job was to stand there for 8 hours to make sure he didn't bend, fold, or mutilate the nurses and or the building. This was not fun because he was out of control emotionally. So I heard a lot of words that I heard my dad say under special circumstances at home when things didn't go his way. And he called the nurses names that they'd never heard before and all kinds of things like that. And that went on for 8 hours. And I'd come out and I'd given up smoking, but I took it up for a short while right after that. You know, I'd just come out of there just shaking like... Because you're just kind of standing there. Guy, he would spit at you, so you had to stand around the corner. He'd spit at you, yell at you, do all this kind of stuff. Can you imagine the torture for 8 hours? So that's not an idea of a comfortable place for a thinker to be. Okay. Let's take a stand-up break for just about 5 minutes. We've got 50 minutes. I'm going to share an illustration. I'm going to cut you loose. But it's on now. Life, and then what is our new identity in Christ? How does it apply? So I encourage you to hang on. But one of the illustrations I like to share, and I don't think this is in your notes, but I like to share with the thinker, is this. That let's just give an example here of here I am up here, and God desires me to walk in His presence. Now, this is probably a bad diagram, so just kind of take the principles, but not the whole thing, okay? So this thing doesn't write very well. It says this is the presence of God. So here I am. I'm trying to walk with God. Well, a lot of thinkers then view the Christian life like this. That I've got all these steps, and I'm working really hard, and they reach it up there. And they finally got so far up on the ladder, and they're really walking with the Lord and they're trying to bridge the gap, if you will. I'm not sure there is a gap, by the way, but you know, as they begin to walk and so forth and so on. And so, because they tend to be do-oriented because they're performance people. So they work really hard. Then what happens when they fail? Here they are. They're not only down at the bottom, but they're laying on their back. Now all of a sudden, not only do they have to work hard just to get back here. Thank you, Mr. Bill. Not only do they have to work hard here, but they've also got to, they've got that much farther to go, and guess how they feel? Pretty discouraged. I mean, this is a hopeless scenario. There's a bunch of work to do, and I don't know if I can do it. And so then, when they fail, so what they tend to be, here's what it practically looks like. It seems like they have two bags that they bring into the relationship with God. They have their do bag, their performance bag, right? And then, really, the only thing that allows them to come into God's presence, anyone know what that is? Well, it's the blood of Christ, isn't it? Is there really the only thing that allows them into God's presence? It's just this bag. But a thinker's got the do bag. So when they fail and they're down like this, they think, boy, I can't go in God's presence because my do bag is empty. So what would happen if you came into God's presence and your do bag was empty? Well, he'd just kick you right out. And so what they do is then they perform or repent. They have kind of, when they fail like this, they have a performance-based repentance, if you will. And they try to fill their do bag before they feel worthy. They punish themselves to come back into the Lord's presence. Now, what I'd like you to consider, this is a modernized illustration. I'd like you to consider that over here, maybe even behind the bushes and you can't see them, is God's holy escalator. Okay? Powered by what? The blood of Christ. Hebrews chapter 9. And all we do is we encourage people, well, when you fail like this, here's what you do. Crawl through the bushes and get on the escalator. And let the blood of Christ bring you right into His presence. That's all you have to do. Don't worry about, don't look at all this stuff that you have, what you think you have to do to get up there. The thing you need to do when you fall, is you need God's presence. That's what you need. Now, an interesting thing happened then. As I was sharing this with a pastor down south, he said, I saw him some time later, probably about 2 or 3 months, and he said, well, now I've got a problem. You remember this diagram you shared? And I said, okay, I remember it. He said, now I've got a problem with it. Because here's what happened. I my struggles, and I was bopping around the road of life, and I fell in that area again, and I remembered what you said, and instead of letting my guilt, because an empty do bag, drive me away, I just crawled over onto the escalator and said, here I am, Lord. And I let the blood of, I only can approach you on the blood of Christ. By the way, that's the only way you can approach Him anyway. It's through the blood of Christ. So you don't need the righteous works to do it. Or the unrighteous, whatever. You have the blood of Christ. And so he said, I crawled over here onto the escalator, so to speak. I was in the presence of God. And he said, you know, in 5 minutes, he took away all the guilt of my failure. Now, I'm feeling guilty because I don't feel guilty. And I said, that is a problem, isn't it? Now, I want to ask you one question. When you felt guilty, how long did you feel guilty? Well, the thing he was struggling with, by the way, was pornography. He said, I felt guilty for sometimes 2, 3, 4 days. I mean, I'm a man of God, right? And stuff, and so I beat myself for that many days before I felt worthy again to come into God's presence. And I said, well, in those 1, 2, 3, 4 days that you felt guilty, how righteous of a life did you lead? He said, not very righteous. I said, yeah, what was happening up here? Well, I didn't feel worthy to fellowship with God. So I didn't. And I said, now, explain to me what happened to you. Well, he explained to me, and he said, 5 minutes later, I felt guilty for not feeling guilty. I just asked him a question. I says, now, in your experience then, do you find yourself sinning more or sinning less? Just out of curiosity. And he says, well, to be really honest, he said, this whole area is drying up. I don't struggle with it near as much. You see, my 2 or 3 day beating and flagellating myself actually increased the problem. And now I can go through this whole cycle, sometimes in a little as 10 minutes, and it's over and done with. I'm back in the presence of the Lord, and I'm encouraged. And I don't want to go back to it now. And he says, in fact, that's just becoming less and less, and I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. So thinkers many times, does this make sense to you? So thinkers many times have problems with the do bag. You know, I've got to do this, I've got to perform, and if I fail, I've got to beat myself, flagellate myself, you know, whip the back because I failed this way before I feel like I can come in the very presence of God. In other words, I can't forgive myself for failing. What do thinkers hate? Failure. They don't like to fail. Now, most people don't like to fail, but they really don't like to fail. Are there a few questions in our last 4 minutes? I wanted to leave some time for question and answers. And most of the time, people ask questions that are going to be answered in the next sessions ahead. Go ahead. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. See, there's some people, I think, what you'll find also is that denominations are created around the temperaments. What do you think thinker denominations are? Real liturgical, really doctrinal, those that emphasize Bible study, those that emphasize, sometimes it's even your hellfire and brimstone because they live under guilt continually, all the time. And in fact, some people will say, you know, God was present because I felt guilty. See, they become to equate the presence of God with guilt. And so they know that they're in right standing with God. How do you know you're in right standing with God? Because I feel guilty. Now, isn't that encouraging? But, you know, I lived that way for the first 2 or 3 years of my life. I was always guilty, felt always guilty. I had a lot to feel guilty about. But I did, even when I didn't have things to feel guilty about, until I one time listened to a tape, and it was on true guilt and false guilt. And I do have an overhead on that, by the way. There are characteristics of true guilt and characteristics of false guilt. And I realized I was living under false guilt. And I just needed to feel guilty for some reason. And whereas God's guilt always leads to repentance and peace. But Satan's false guilt is always kind of nebulous. You can't quite put your finger on it and so forth and so on. So I used to pray, oh God, I'm guilty, I'm guilty. Tell me where I'm guilty. And God would lean over and say, you're guilty, but I'm not going to tell you. I just want you to live in it. I said, okay. You know, that's what I felt. So does that kind of answer your question? Yeah, it is kind of a guilt-motivated thing that doers do, that thinkers do. Yeah. Okay? Questions? Any other questions? What's the doer denomination? Yeah, what is it? What would they say? Let's see, Tim left. Well, Tim he used to work for Nike. What's the Nikes do? Just do it. It's enough of this talking. Let's get out there and do it. Let's get out there and knock on those doors. Let's win those people. You know, the more doors you knock on, the more likely people... Yeah, you got some JWs, right? That can do that. Yeah, you bet. And see, that's just it. If you put a thinker like myself, stood a thinker on the driveway of my home, and my wife is a feeler-doer, and you say, okay, you go this way and I'll go this way, and you go talk to as many people as you can about the Lord in the next 10 minutes, who do you think would talk to the most people? Yeah, my wife would, hands down, she'd do it. Yeah, she'll hit the garage sales on the way. That's right. And see, she's the only woman I know of that can go out for a 5-minute walk and come back 2 hours later. Because, you know, she got sidetracked on the way someplace. And in fact, Benjamin and Zach called, they think that's Mom's book, Sidetracked in the Wilderness. And they tell her that, you know, they said, you know, my youngest said, hey Mom, you got sidetracked in the wilderness, didn't you? You know, so, because she does, she's the one that can, she will evangelize our neighborhood. She really will, because, and she does it, how do you call this? She's not doing it intentionally, is what I'm saying. She just does it because that's her. So she's out there and she's talking to this lady and this lady, and you know, and we were at a swimming pool last summer, and Denver's a fun place to live because people are open. They're really open. I'm not saying they aren't here, but there are a lot of non-Christians, but they're very open. And so Pam was sharing something about, you know, Bible study or something like this, and this lady just kind of sat up in her chair, looked at her and said, are you a Christian? And Pam goes, yeah. And Pam says, are you? And she goes, oh no, I'd never do that. She sat back, you know, and they had this great conversation then. You know, but that's the kind of, are you a Christian? Oh no, I'd never do that. He said, you know, okay. You know, so anyway, yeah, there, and then of course, what's the feeler denomination? What do you think that might be? Yeah. Those very expressive, feeling oriented, you know, God was here, the goosebump God. You know, he was here today because I got goosebumps, you know, or something like that. And what you'll see that each temperament will define the presence of God according to their personality, or according to their personality. So thinkers say God's present when I understand and know Him and have some new intellectual insight. Doers say God was present because my toe grew an inch. I saw the power of God work itself out somehow. Somebody got saved. And feelers say, I know God was present here because I felt Him. Or I got goosebumps or something.
What about strong thinking feeling?
Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah. Combination of those two. I mean, really, a lot of times they like that great intellectual insight, but they also want to sense or feel God's presence too. See, that's what's interesting about the blends. Blends will take some of the sharp edges off the compulsivity. So that's really a good blend, thinker feeler. In a sense, it's mine, but you know, it is because the sharp edges are taken off the thinker. Because I've seen too many thinkers that don't have feeler. And that you have to teach them how to social, because they don't have any social in them. You know, they can be a little sharp, rough around the edges, hermits in many cases. You know, that kind of stuff. So the blends, and we're going to be looking at some of the blends, they kind of temper some of those things. So you see this unique, their identity, like a thinker-feeler's identity would be in task and relationship. And they would tend to intertwine those two together. You know, more so than the doers who get their identity from their ability to impact somebody. You know, so make a change. Well, let's dismiss for tonight. And what time are we going to start tomorrow night? Is it 6 or 6:30? Would 6:30 give you a little bit more time to eat and get here and everything? Why don't we just do 6:30, okay? And then maybe Tim will show up at 6. Yeah, we'll have that. Let's do that on him, okay? So, no, 6:30 tomorrow night. Okay? 6:30? Okay. You're dismissed. We might need to bring out the white jackets here pretty soon, because they're not real comfortable with extreme displays of emotion. And so they're thinking, boy, there must be some major thing. And so we're sitting there on our honeymoon, second day in, and we're driving from Topeka, Kansas to Shangri-La, wherever that is. Where is it? Over here at Lake of the Cherokees or something? Over here, Ada, no? Yeah, Tahlequah, wherever. Over here in eastern Oklahoma. And so we're going over there, and we're going to stop for lunch on a little roadside park or something on the way. And all of a sudden, she just starts bawling. She's just weeping. And I'm sitting there going, oh, she finally realized what she's done. She really understands that she really got a bad deal when she married. At one night, and she's really in sad shape. You know, and I'm just feeling really bad. And I said, what is wrong? What's wrong with you? And she goes, I'm just so happy. Oh, man. I tell you. So, that kind of stuff, you got to take that to the cross. I'm so happy. Yes, that's why you're crying uncontrollably. Yes, I can understand that. So, live with your wife in an understanding way. That's what the Bible says. So, you see that unique self can cause a lot of dissension. So, that's another reason that we're going to examine our uniqueness. And again, of course, what do we do with our differences? Well, we're going to take them to the cross anyway. And that's where they belong. Okay? Why don't we go ahead and take about a 10-minute break, and we'll get back into interpreting the results of the test. And if you haven't taken the unique self test, you need to do that.